what you are offering in your office, in your work environment, isn't inspiring, doesn't excite people. You know, they can stay in their bedroom in their pajamas and work from their laptop. And if they can do that, they will do that. So I think it's on us as real estate advisors. I think it's on landlords. I think it's on business owners to provide an environment that their staff are genuinely excited about, can genuinely be proud about, and go, do you know what? I don't mind going to the office, or actually, I quite like going to the office.
Hi, I'm Gordon Lamphere, and welcome to the Real Finds Podcast, the podcast where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Jimmy Brennan. Jimmy is founder of Love Mondays, an office consultancy focused on helping businesses and their employees fall in love with workspaces. In this episode, we explore how flexible offices, meaningful amenities, and a focus on culture are transforming what work feels like and providing environments that people actually love is a necessity in the modern workspace world. On today's episode, we talk about offices, and it's well worth a listen to anyone involved in the workspace game. Jimmy, thanks for hopping on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So why real estate?
Wow. That's a question. I'll be honest, I sort of landed in it, but ever since I landed in it, I've just absolutely loved it. And I think it's quite poignant to point out the different types of real estate that exist, because obviously you've got commercial, you've got residential, but we're in the commercial side. And for me, I specialize in the flex / serviced office market. And for me, that I've just found it so fascinating since I've joined, the different styles, the different trends, the way people try and differentiate themselves, the changes in the market for the demand for what people want. You know, when I started, it was literally four walls and a desk. I'm sure everybody's heard of WeWork now. We know what they offer. And then like some of the buildings I deal with over here, like we've got, there's a building in Waterloo and it's designed or inspired by Alice in Wonderland. So there is a 8-foot white rabbit in reception. There is, was it Tweedledee and Tweedledum smiling in one of the meeting rooms? It's really great. So there's so much, and people like different things. And that's what I find fascinating. So as long as it's something that piques my interest, I'll stick with it. And like I said, I just fell into it and then fell in love with it.
So I know you talked about falling in love right now, but why do you love Mondays? It seems like, who was it? Was it Garfield the cat that hates Mondays?
Yeah.
Why do you love Mondays?
So the story all comes in, and you know, this is part of everything that the company represents. I worked in the leisure industry for 4 or 5 years when I first started working. And there was a guy there called Jeff. I'm not going to try and imitate his South African accent because it will be bad, even if it's hilarious. But I remember him saying, you know, he had this wonderful environment that he worked in. He loved the people. He loved his members. He loved everything about it. And he said, you know, the day I wake up and don't feel like that is the day I quit, the same day, the same damn day. I hear these words. I can replay this story in my head all the time. But that really stuck with me, and that really resonated with me. And it's when I was working at that particular company, I did love the staff that I worked with. We was all quite young. We used to go out, we used to hang out a bunch. You know, it's a really fun crowd to work with. I loved the job that I'd done, but I also loved the environment. I mean, I worked in a leisure center. I would do a workout before work. I'd go to the sauna after work. I'd shower before my shift. Like, everything. I could play tennis, I could go swimming, like everything was there. It was fantastic. But I never ever felt, you know, people say, oh, do what you love, you know, have a job that you love and you never work a day in your life. Well, that's how it was for me. I never, even on my off days, I would still go there because that was my gym and I enjoyed it. That was primarily because of the environment I was in. Why are our offices any different? And you hear everyone, particularly on a Sunday afternoon, if it's sunny and you're in the pub with a pint, oh, it's Monday, I've got work tomorrow, better not have another one. why are we going, it's Monday? Why are we not saying, oh, it's Monday tomorrow. I can go and see Gordon. We can go to the gym at lunchtime together, you know, see what he's benching this week, you know. Oh, and, you know, after work, I'm going to grab a drink with so-and-so. Oh, I'm going to come in early on Monday and I'm going to grab a coffee with so-and-so. Why is that element left? It's because what you are offering in your office, in your work environment, isn't inspiring, doesn't excite people. You know, they can stay in their bedroom in their pajamas and work from their laptop. And if they can do that, they will do that. So I think it's on us as real estate advisors. I think it's on landlords. I think it's on business owners to provide an environment that their staff are genuinely excited about, can genuinely be proud about, and go, do you know what? I don't mind going to the office, or actually I quite like going to the office because I've got a gym, I've got this. It's an easy commute. You know, there's great food options around for lunchtime. They're all the things that all of us as humans love. That's why. So, and I think if you've got that, and look, if you don't like the industry you're in, change it. If you don't like the company you're at, you can change that. But it's on business owners, on landlords, and on real estate advisors to really shape the market and provide spaces that people love. And that's why, you know, the company's called Love Mondays Office Space, but the hashtag is Love Mondays again, because no one should ever be on, oh, it's Monday, I don't want to get up tomorrow. That's starting to border on the mental health boundary, which is a whole other thing. But we should be supporting people. Let's have an environment what we love. Let's be somewhere that is exciting, that, you know, our name's on the wall, and we like inviting our customers down. And, you know, when you're having your weekends with your friends, you can go, oh, my office is great. We've got a sauna in the basement and we've got a lovely roof terrace that I always eat my lunch on in the summer. And I mean, I say summer over here because London, we get 2 weeks of summer. You're in Illinois, you know, you hopefully get a bit better weather than we do. But depending on, you know, if you've got a lovely roof terrace or a courtyard or whatever it is that you like, that should be part of your office space. It should not be four walls, blue carpet, and a desk. We've all seen the film Office Space, right? A cult film. Like, no, that whole film is everything that's wrong with an office. So let's have the opposite of that, and then we'll love it instead of hating it.
So we've got your why for sure. How do we get to that how? How do we get to an office that we love? So what are the key elements of offices that inspire that excitement, that joy, that reason to come in, that make us love Mondays?
So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is how connected bosses are with their teams and with their staff. If you're in, you know, let's use Google or Microsoft as an example, where they've literally got thousands of employees, it is extremely difficult for Bill Gates to know what every employee wants and likes. Okay, but most companies are not Microsoft. They are the top 1%. So let's talk about most companies, the SMEs, the lifeblood of what makes work in Britain work, and I'm sure work in America work too. You know, your people that employ 50 people, 20 people, 100 people, it's about understanding them and providing for their needs. Location is always going to be key. But, you know, here in London, transport's fantastic. We've got loads on our doorstep. It's great. So it's never going to be a huge problem location-wise in London. I use London example, Manchester, Birmingham are great. You know, in the States, New York, Washington, all these places, they're really well connected. So that's the easy bit. It's then understanding what are you asking from your staff? What do you want them to do? And how is your space productive? How does that connect? So for instance, we're doing a podcast, and I said to you before we come on, I've gone to one of the buildings I work with today who happen to have a podcast studio. It's silly me sitting at home with a pair of £20 headphones that sometimes work, sometimes don't, and run out of battery after 5 minutes. They've got a full setup here. And how many companies with social media need podcast rooms or editing suites? So this particular provider, they're called Boutique Workplace Company, shout out to them. You know, they've gone, right, well, we're going to put in a fully soundproof working podcast studio. You can see the TV behind me. There's headphones, there's mics. Great. So that makes that productive for that element of your business. Now what do we want? Are you a health conscious whatever? Then make sure that there are facilities in the building that support that. We hear a lot about B Corp. I don't know how big B Corp is in America, but it's quite a big thing over here, you know, sustainability credentials. So a lot of the buildings that we work with, they now go for B Corp certification themselves. So they've been through the process. They understand. They can connect with you on a human level. And that is felt, you know, if you're ever over here in the UK and I took you around four or five different buildings, you'd be able to tell what ones are the same company and what ones aren't just by walking through the doors, because you feel that instant connection because they really care and they really provide. I think my role and what I do with Love Mondays is have these conversations with business owners when they're looking for office space and say, hey, Gordon, you know, your company is 50 people. How many days a week are you actually in the office? What is important to your staff? What does your current space not provide that you would like to? And then find the solutions that support that. So if you find out that actually you have a hybrid working policy and most people are in 3 days working from home 2 days, can you introduce a rota system? Can we take an office slightly smaller than for 50 people, let's say for 30, 35 people, but for your money, for your budget, we're then going to get a much higher quality space, which is going to have all these features, which is going to make all them staff want to come into the office because they're going to be more productive and they're going to enjoy the little water cooler moments and they're going to enjoy using the facilities. And there's phone booths and meeting rooms that they can just pop into as and when they need for their little catch-ups. And now they're not going to want to be sat in their bedroom in their pajamas. So they're going to enjoy it. And so I think it's really important that we uncover that connection. And buildings are designed with that in mind, but even more important that people like you and I understand the buildings that provide that and are able to articulate that back to people looking for office space, because it's absolutely ludicrous to just go, hey, there's an office. Yeah, take that one. It's great. It's cheap. Cheap doesn't work. Cheap works this much of the time.
Yeah, I think you definitely get what you pay for when you're looking at an office space. And I wanted to go back to one of the things you mentioned, which was developing flexible work schedules. I know what we've been working with a number of our clients is kind of trying to find schedules that work. Yeah. And I'm curious, as flex work has risen, how are you seeing businesses adapt in terms of schedules? What kind of schedules do you see working for most businesses? Or is it just a complete what we've been seeing in the market? Every business is unique, and there are some businesses that, you know, need 1 day a week, and there are some businesses that need five.
Yeah. The first bit of advice I'd give to any business owner that looks at this is stop believing the media, because the media sensationalizes, it's headline grabbing, and ultimately is selling advertising space. So don't worry about
it. I think that's one thing that everyone on the podcast, regardless of their ideological perspectives, will tell you is, Do not believe the media.
Yeah, exactly. So when I talk to people, because you're right, you get people saying, oh, we only come in 1 day a week. We only come in 2 days a week. Other people want to be in 5 days a week. The key element here is why. Why does that work for your business? Why do you only want to be in 1 day a week? Because often when you speak to these people that say, oh, we only want to come into the office 1 day a week, it's a budget thing. The business owner is scared about overcommitting spend and staff not using the space and therefore wasted money that could be reinvested elsewhere in the business. Look, real estate's expensive. Let's you know, after people, it's the next most expensive cost usually in a business. So it's got to be right for the business. I think understanding that why and understanding what the flexibility is. I'm certainly seeing in my element of the market, the flexible / serviced market, we're seeing a lot of bigger companies moving towards hybrid working and taking, you know, they're still taking big space. They're taking whole floors in a service building, you know, or half a floor in a service building, which is 3,000, 5,000, 7,000 square feet still for them, because, you know, they're a huge company that employ God knows how many people. But for them, that represents a saving, and the flexibility on the contract allows them to upscale when they need. So if something's working, they can increase it. On the other hand, if it's not, it's a much shorter term contract than a traditional lease in our market.
Can you briefly explain a little bit more what a service building is? Because I think there's a number of our listeners that are stateside that might not have heard that term in particular, but it equates to a couple of different terms that are in, you know, the New York, Chicago, LA.
Markets. But I was literally this week, I was speaking to someone based in South Carolina, and I had to do just this. So the analogy I use that people seem to like is, think of serviced or flexible office space like an all-inclusive holiday. You turn up, everything's there. Your drinks are included, your food's included, the rooms are cleaned and everything else. Whereas a lease is more like a self-catering holiday, you know, where you book a villa, but you've got to get all the food in yourself, and you haven't got a cleaner coming around every day, changing the towels for you and everything. So the easiest way to explain it is, think of a serviced office similar to an all-inclusive holiday. You turn up with your laptop, you plug in day one, and away you go. Furniture's included, all your bills are included. There's somebody on reception to help you sign for parcels, welcome any guests. You have a lot of shared facilities in a serviced office, whereas in a traditional lease, you probably wouldn't. In a traditional lease, you'd have to account for meeting rooms, breakout space, kitchenettes, things like that. In a serviced office, all of those things, whilst you still can have your own, a lot of them, kitchens, toilets, corridors, are part of the shared facilities. Meeting rooms, they'll have a variety of meeting rooms that you can hire ad hoc, rather than, you know, because if you take a 10-person boardroom, you're paying for that all the time, whether it's being used or not. And 90% of the time you're finding companies, the 10-person boardroom either isn't being used or has two people sitting in it. The amount of times I've gone into a boardroom and it's just two people sitting in there, and I'm like, you need a boardroom for this? You need a booth. You don't need, you know. One of my oldest clients, they're a charity in the UK, quite a big charity. They've got 7 or 8 different locations. They always used a ratio of 1.3 or 1.4 staff per desk for any location they look in, because they embrace the hybrid working model. They get a better quality of building, and then they can use these facilities that we're talking about, and they find that really, really useful. So they were doing that way before hybrid working and COVID and everything existed and reshaped the working world. That was their model. And so when COVID hit, they were like, yeah, it's cool, we geared up for working from home, no problem, we'll keep going. and the staff were okay and they were looked after, and it helped with the work-life balance and all the other good things that people enjoy. But they found that ratio worked really, really well. So if there was 50 in a location, they'd only take 30, 35 desks. And on the days that all 50 were in, they would then book the boardroom or use the breakout space or sit on the roof and do that. So I think it really depends. The key with a serviced office is definitely the flexibility and the facilities that you get. So if you want better facilities but don't necessarily want to be paying for them full time, look at serviced. And if you need flexibility because your company's growing and you don't know how big you're going to be 12 months from now, or I don't know, maybe you've got some projects so your numbers fluctuate or whatever, then that's another big reason to consider flexible and service offices.
So now that we've talked about serviced offices, I'm curious, what kind of services actually matter? Because like, there are a lot of innovative amenities out there. And I know we've talked to landlords that have been considering putting things in, like podcast studios. And then, you know, we reach out to tenants and their variety of the market and the demand. You know, some markets require that, like I'm sure London does or downtown Chicago does. And other markets, people go, you know, we really don't care about that, but we just like a gym.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing in terms of like the innovative office amenities that work for, some of this will be market specific, but what are the amenities that maybe aren't necessary, at least that you've seen in the London market?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think I in my mind, at least, I split this into 2 or 3 categories. I split this into the first category is what will actually affect the day-to-day working. So things like meeting rooms, things like phone booths, they're really, really important because companies use them, they benefit, and they affect the way people work. So people will buy a office within a building because it has them. Whereas if you look at something like a podcast studio or a gym, they're a little bit more of a nice to have. We wouldn't pick a building purely because it has a gym, but we might not pick it if it doesn't and the one down the road does. If we're like that about 2 and that one's got a gym and that one hasn't, we're going to pick that one. Whereas things like phone booths are essential. Good quality breakout space, for me personally, is the most essential thing, because I've been to these buildings They go, yeah, we got a breakout space. It's a T-point as big as a bathroom, and there's like one stool there. And it's like, if somebody's making a cup of tea and somebody's trying to take a phone call, that's never going to work. The noise is just going to, you can't do that. Whereas if you zone off your breakout and you make it a nice open breakout area, a lot of the companies over in the UK, when they design their breakout, they use the American diner style booths. And they work really, really well. You'll see them all around the edge. And they work really well because they're great for people having lunch, but they're also great for little catch-ups and one-to-ones. And when you've got three or four of them dotted about and people are sitting there, it creates a real atmosphere, like a positive vibe, a buzz in the office. And, you know, humans, even the really most introverted humans, still want some kind of personal connection. When you walk in and there's a bit of excitement and a bit of a buzz in the air, it lifts you. I mean, I can see you've got a Bulls jersey in the background. You, if you're a big basketball fan, I'm a soccer fan. When you go to the stadium and you watch one of the games, if the crowd's really up for it and they're all singing, yeah, it transfers onto the court. The players play better. Whereas if the crowd's a little bit flat and it's a nothing game and you're playing someone, you know, they're not performing very well, the crowd start booing or get on their back, and they don't perform so well. The crowd, they say in football, we call it the 12th man. So I really think that's, for me, the right breakout space. Because take your office, take any office you've ever been to, you know, Jimmy and Gordon sit at the desk and we do our work. But when Jimmy wants to phone a client or something, Jimmy wants to get up and walk around and do this and that. Gordon wants to go over here, lean over someone's desk. If you have a breakout, but we create breakout spaces naturally. So if you have a really positive breakout space designed well, with phone booths, with semi-private booths, with areas to eat your lunch, areas to work alone, whatever, that impacts the team. That has a real benefit. And that's where you can start to look at how you can use that to cost save on your office, because maybe you don't take so much space. Whereas, yes, absolutely, gyms, a lot of people ask for gyms over here. I tell you the big thing that people ask for over here, and I'm a big fan of it, pet-friendly offices, so where you can bring your dog to work. A lot of buildings still are like, no pets allowed, won't let you bring a dog in the office. And it's like, but if the dog's house trained and you're responsible for it, that's absolutely fine. We're not talking about bringing a pack of rabid Rottweilers in to run amok. Do you know what I mean? Susan in accounts wants to bring in her Chihuahua because it's her companion. I don't think there's a huge deal with that. Again, if the dog's yapping all day, maybe I'd feel different. But, you know, that's then on there. I think, you know, we get asked a lot for pet-friendly offices. Showers in buildings is like a given. If a building isn't 24/7, if a building doesn't have showers, and if a building doesn't have cycle racks, we have a lot of cyclists here in the UK. They are big no-nos. People rule buildings out for that off the bat. They won't even go and look at it. Whereas a gym is a nice house. Do you know what we have got in? There's two buildings in London that I know of. They've even built saunas into the offices. One in Chancery Lane and one in the West End near Tottenham Court Road. That's a lovely thing to have. I mean, if you've had a stressful week and you just want to go sit in the sauna for 10 minutes, that's fantastic. You know, what a perk. But I don't know anyone that's signed on a building purely because it's got a sauna.
Yeah. You know, unless you're dealing with someone from the Baltic or a Swede or a Finn, I'm not sure necessarily a sauna is going to be a deal breaker, but in terms of that, there are some things that you know, I know you mentioned in terms of, you know, deal breakers that I know we've had for people, which is pets. As a millennial, there are people who definitely see their pets as their little fur babies, and yeah. I think that there's going to be a move towards a lot of landlords looking at kind of how we address changes in our society and kind of move into maybe a more future-friendly office mm-hmm. model. I'm curious, what are some of the other future-driven changes you've seen in terms of shifts that have been going in the office market post-2020?
Yeah, for me, I think that I look at my career in the industry. When I first joined, it was very much those four walls, and everyone paid for location. Location was key. How close were you to the station? It was a good-looking building from the outside, plenty of glass and everything. Then the WeWork bombshell dropped, and it was like, hold on a minute, we can have pool tables, we can have ping pong, we can have beer taps, we can do all these wonderful things. And everyone suddenly, they were the new kids on the block, and everyone wanted that. Fast forward to now, and people are going, well, okay, we want some of them nice things, but we also need some of the more practical stuff. So I think I dare say it, because tomorrow somebody will invent something and make me look really silly. But we've reached we've reached the edge of amenities that we can put in buildings, because aside from having like co-living, co-working space, which honestly I'm not a fan of, because I wouldn't want to live in the same place that I work, because there's no switch there's no switch off time in your brain. You know, you're just, then we're machines effectively then. So for me, I think we've maybe hit the edge of amenities in what we can do. I think what we need to think about is how the spaces are designed, in terms of, you know, just a big open floor plate, or equally a really pokey kind of space with loads of little nooks and crannies, not anything usable. I think things like that need to be really thought about when designing and laying out a space, to have these different zones. So when you've got somebody who is a bit more of an introvert and wants, you know, every office has one, the person who never takes their headphones off and is just staring at their computer all day. They normally work in IT or accounts, right? But they want to be left alone and talk to as few people as humanly possible. Then you have, like me, the chatterbox, who wants to be around as many people. It's important to have different areas for them to work. I think the next big thing, and we're seeing it anyway, I don't want to sound corny, but tech or AI and how that comes into buildings. One of the most exciting things I saw in a building is actually in the Wells Fargo building over here in the UK. They had a bit of tech, and this for me was next level, and I'm sure tech has moved on a lot since then. Every person, you know, you got a swipe card access to get in. Well, every person's swipe card access was pre-programmed to that individual. And it also worked as a tracker while they was in the building. Now, this worked twofold. A, if I've booked a meeting room, but I'm not in there using it, and you need a meeting room, you can look on this live floor plan and see if I'm in that meeting room or not. And if Jimmy's booked the meeting room at 4 o'clock and he isn't in there, great, you can use it. So there was more usage of the spaces that people wanted and less wastage. But it went further than that. If you like it really hot in the office, I don't know, 28 degrees. Sorry, you guys talking Fahrenheit. I'm Celsius. So 28 is hot, right? But I like it at 16. If we had a meeting together, this bit of kit would take the average for the people that were in the room and preset it. So when we walked in, it was at a median level. It would go further than that and tell you what the emissions were outside. So whether it was worth having the windows open or closed, so that you was getting clean air or not in the building. It had all these wonderful little bits of tech. And I think things like that are fascinating, because again, looking at the model between the flex and the traditional, if you've got a client looking at taking, you know, 3,000 square foot because he's 20 to 30 people and they need meeting rooms and they need breakout areas and everything, but then you've got a bit of tech like this that says, well, of your four meeting rooms, only one of them's used 80% of the time, the small one, the others are hardly used. You can advise them, don't take those meeting rooms, go to a building that has shared facilities, still take space for the people, still take your one meeting room that you're using all the time, and for the others, just use them as you need them. So you're saving money on the rent. You'll spend a little bit of that back on meeting rooms, or you can maybe negotiate. I often, with deals over here in service offices, we negotiate credits or packages for meeting rooms. And then they save a lot of cash because they're not paying that ground rental. But that's all down to tech, because if you don't have any way to monitor how it's being used or not. So I think the tech revolution in the real estate world is yet to come. And I'm excited for what it brings. There will be challenges there, but it's exciting.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. We actually have one of our guests coming on next week, I believe, at the end of the week, who's going to be talking about this exact topic, who runs a business in Silicon Valley that does non-invasive, non-individualized, but monitoring of how employees use workspaces, and then tries to improve the workspace based on that. And I think we're going to get into a totally different world and how we use spaces when we actually start to get real data. Yeah. Because we've been really operating in a touchy-feely world for a long time without real hard data. And that's going to make our job both very interesting and a lot more effective and a lot more challenging.
in terms of all that, one of the big challenges, though, that we're going through, and I'm curious how you're seeing this, is kind of personalizing office spaces and kind of how you see that. I know you've mentioned, in particular, a lot of businesses that look at rotating desks and hoteling. How have you seen that play out in workforces? I know we have a business that I can look out the window and see, Zebra Technologies, where they've done hoteling models. I've talked to businesses like Zurich Insurance that does hoteling as well. And then there's some businesses that are in our market that have tried hoteling, and they've like absolutely had complete employee fallout, people losing their minds over not having personalized space. What are you kind of seeing in terms of personalizing office spaces and kind of catering to that new and changing world?
Well, I think it links back to what you just said a moment ago about data. You know, I'm a big fan of the film Moneyball. Don't know if you've watched it. Hopefully you have. But it's not the statistics and the data itself. It's how you use and how you interpret that data. You know, because often people look at stats and use them to prove their point without looking at the other 90% that they're not talking about. So that's always interesting. I think when it comes to personalized space, look, we need to read. Let's use basketball, obviously, but you know, Chicago Bulls. I'm not a basketball fan. I know who Michael Jordan is. I know who the Chicago Bulls is. We've all watched Last Dance. What a fantastic documentary that was. So we know that. But you've still got the Lakers, and there's plenty of people that like the Lakers, and there's still people that like, I know, the San Antonio Spurs, only because I'm a Spurs fan in soccer, and so the name was the same. So I was like, oh, they'll do. Don't know if they're any good. You know, and you got all these different things. So people are always going to want different things. And I think if we're trying to use data, and this is what has been said about the media, too many smaller business owners, they use what I call ego metrics. And they look at something that says, oh, look, you know, it's in the Times that, you know, 80% of successful business owners have this in their office. So I'm going to have that. That's not going to make you successful. The graft and the work and everything you put in is what's going to make you successful. That's just a something in common, right? Now, I'm not saying whatever the thing is isn't important, but when it comes to personalizing your office, it should exactly be that personal. And it should be done in a way that you are able to adapt and change. Because if you design your office or your building in one particular way, and then we have a massive shift like we did with COVID, people going to hybrid and working from home a lot more, then all of a sudden, you know, the dinosaurs went extinct because they didn't evolve. You have to be able to evolve. It's one of the things that I get the biggest question when people come from a traditional lease to a serviced office. They go, oh, how what about, you know, I don't want to look too startup-y. I want it to be ours. It's like, you can paint the walls whatever color you want. You can have your logo. You can have plants in the office. You can have different furniture in the office. You can bring your own furniture. I mean, short of putting in a double garage or a swimming pool, you can do what you want, you know? So I think personalization is great. But I go back to my previous comments of how does it impact the team? Yeah, because, you know, I hear people say, oh, you have to have a clear desk policy. I've got a wife and child. I want a picture of them on my desk because I love seeing a picture of my daughter. You know, are you going to say that I have to clear that down every night? Come on, let's trust people. I look behind you and your office there right now. You know, you've personalized that for you and that works for you. And you've got some achievements there, which is great. You've got something that inspires you that's great. And it's nice and tight. Great, do that. If your colleague wants something complete opposite of that, they want flowers on the water, then let them have it. You know, like I encourage personalization. The buildings that I work with encourage personalization. I think what you tend to find is people pick buildings when they walk in, that atmosphere that they see, does that align with how they would design their office? WeWork are known for being quite tech friendly. If someone's in tech, they probably want to be in a WeWork-esque type space. Whereas there's a company over here called Auriga, and they would describe themselves as casually corporate. So, you know, if you're more into finance or slightly more corporate world, that's probably somewhere a little bit more for you. And then, you know, there's everything in between. You mentioned the hotel-esque stuff. There's companies like One Avenue and Beaumont over here that are hotel-esque, because their owners and their founders have a background from the hotel industry, so they try and roll that out. And there's everything in between. I think understand what your people want, be close to your people, have a look at what's on brand for your image. You know, I'm a smart casual kind of image is what I present. I think you've got to mix that between modern and professional. I don't need to be in a suit and tie every day. All right, I'm not a lawyer. But equally, I am not a shorts and t-shirt guy. I'm not, unfortunately, working from a beach in California.
Well, we're not all in California, and that's a very different market. I'm curious for kind of what you see, though, is some of the differences between markets like the US and the UK in general. I know we've had a couple of folks on from the UK in the past talking about a variety of things, from housing to a number of other issues. What you see is, for somebody who's an American business who might be considering going to the UK, what do you see as some of maybe the biggest differences between the two markets?
From the weather, it rains a lot. No, I'm joking. Over here in the UK, because I've been fortunate enough to work with quite a few American businesses, some quite big American businesses that have come over to the UK and explored the UK for office space. One of them many years ago, I'm sure they won't mind me mentioning, Grable Relocation. Don't know if you guys know who they are. I know they're quite big in the States. I managed to help them find an office when they started. They was in the Shard. And it was interesting because for them, it was about having a very prominent space, having a really, the address was important for them because it was the image that they presented to their clients, you know, and they upscaled and a fantastic company, and literally the whole board flew in from America. I think they're based out of Denver, and literally the whole board flew in and all their wives. And I was walking around London with 20 Americans on the board, talking to them, shaking hands, and they were lovely, lovely people. And I got really, really well with them, and it was great to work with them. And then, you know, I look at the guys I was talking to earlier this week who are from South Carolina, and a very different business, and they're just looking for something that's comfortable for their staff. They're not looking at the top of the market. So I think there's differences and similarities. I think the biggest difference I've seen, and this doesn't just go for America, this goes for Europe and the rest of the world, the UK serviced office market, particularly the London market, is the most advanced version of the service flexible market in the world. There are more service flexible office operators and buildings here than there are elsewhere. So I know when WeWork started flooding the New York market in particular, it was kind of like, oh, wow, what's this? This is the new toy. This is amazing. This is the buzzword. And so everyone was looking. But then a lot of other companies, well-established company, go, we don't want a WeWork. And they just assume that serviced office means WeWork. WeWork is a fantastic product, and it has its market. Regus or IWG is another one. They're a global player. I'm sure you guys have heard of them. But again, I rattled off, you know, I could rattle off Canvas, I could rattle off Space Made, Second Home, Boutique Workplace, Office Space in Town, companies that you guys would never heard of. But when you saw them and saw how different they are, and how they can, if you want that really professional and high-end image, you can have it. If you want a startup environment, you can have it. And I think it's not so much that there's so many differences, it's just opening people's eyes to the possibilities. And I would say that, you know, with your house, your car, your mortgage, whatever you do, people want flexibility, and it's no different for a business. So if it hasn't taken a hold yet in the US, it will come at some stage, the flexibility to be able to grow within a contract, not overcommit, and not have to commit to 5 or 10 years upfront, and then all the upfront costs. So just do a year or 2 years and see how things go. That revolution will come to every market because it will be demanded by businesses, and it's the norm over here now. So, you know, people are going back to traditional landlords when they're looking at 5-year leases and going, oh, can I get a break at 1 year? And landlords are like, no, because that's not what a traditional lease is. But they're used to it in service. I have to say to people like that, no, your break will be, you know, you're committing to a minimum of 3 years. If you want a break at 1 year, go serviced.
Yeah, so I think there's definitely going to be a increasing tension in every market between kind of landlords that are looking for longer term stability and tenants that are seeing increasing flexibility. Where have you seen just generally that break come? Is it in the market? Is it typically a year? Is it for service space? For non-service space, as you mentioned, 3 years. Where is that kind of that flexible line?
So historically in the flexible and service market, people signed 12-month commitments. What we've definitely seen over the last 12, maybe 18 months in the UK is companies are more confident not only in themselves but in the market, and we are seeing people stretch into slightly longer commitments now, so 18 to 24 months. I'd say this, people 12 to 18 months tends to be the most common contract length now. Having said that, there's still, you know, a deal I done this week is for a company for 6 months because they've got a few, they only need it for 6 months, but it's fine. It's a project space. No problem at all. The sweet spot for me has been 12 months because you get that trade-off between negotiating power when it comes to the rent and flexibility. You don't want to be moving your company every 5 minutes. Everyone knows that. It's a hassle to pack up 30 desk chairs, computers, and move people from building A to building B. It's a cost. It's time. But equally, if you outgrow a space or that space no longer suits your needs or there's an issue with the building, business goes really well or not so well, then you need to be able to adapt to that and go to a cheaper building or a better building or another location. I had a client that they was always in the city. They done recruitment for banking and they was always in the city of London because that's like the financial district for us. And then 1 year turned around and said, we've got a tech arm to the business now. So we want to go to Farringdon where it's a bit more techy, where there's more that, and actually transport links are better for a lot of our staff. So they've done 18 months in Farringdon and then decided to go back to the city. Fine, whatever. But you are seeing people do that. So I would always recommend 12 months for those slightly larger companies and people that want to be a little bit more settled, 18 months. I tend not to recommend people going more than 18 months unless they're, you know, a really well-established company that have, you know, foresight on what the next 2 years, 3 years, whatever look like for them. If their headcount is likely to grow or downsize by more than one or two, then don't commit to anything longer than that because you just don't know. You're just overcommitting for something which you may want the flexibility.
So very different than the traditional American lease. One of the things that we like to do that's a little different is we like to do our Real Finds Final Four. That's kind of our last little roundup and a way to kind of learn a little bit more about you, learn a little bit more about where the market's going, and kind of, learn a little bit more about maybe who we should bring on next.
Okay.
So my first question, and this is one of my favorites, is where do you see office space going just in general, like 10 years out?
10 years out, as I said, technology is going to have a huge, huge part to play in this. I think the more tech that's in these offices, giving people real data and looking at how it can assist the way in people work, podcast studios for people that are in the creative industries or want their own podcast, things like that. Buildings are, people are looking at bigger and bigger buildings. In London, we have a lot of like townhouses. They're great. They've got loads of character, but they don't lend themselves well to expanding and growing businesses because you can't, they're listed. You can't just knock down walls. There's rules and regulations. Whereas in, a lot of the other big, like even in the Shard, for instance, you can remove walls and put up walls quite easily. There's less restrictions because it's not a listed building. So I think the future is flexible. I think amenity-rich buildings, I think even the cheap buildings that are not amenity-rich, people are just like, I know it's cheap, but I'm still not going to go for it because it's not good enough. It's not just the business that needs it. It's the demands people are getting from their employees. We live in a world now, very different to 10 years ago, where employees are a lot more vocal about what they want and how the workplace should be. And listen, there's a lot of merit in that. Not saying I agree with it all, but you know, they've got some really good points about how to make a space better for different people. There's a lot of people that are now neurodivergent. So how does space how do spaces account for that? Do they have quiet rooms? Do they have phone booths? I've seen buildings putting in prayer rooms for people of different faiths and new mothers and things like that. I think that's phenomenal. I think that's great stuff to have. So I think it's flexible. I think it's a lot more people-centric, and I think that is key. And yeah, I just see that growing, and you know, the more tech can play a positive role in that and help us point out and guide us towards trends, the better it's going to be.
So in terms of trends, you know, we deal with a lot of trends and changes and seasons in our life. And I'm curious if you could step back in time to young Jimmy, if you could give him one little bit of advice, what would it be?
Someone asked me this the other day, or it was a LinkedIn post the other day. There's loads of different things I'd like to say to young Jimmy, but I'd probably, one of the things that my dad said to me, that definitely is important. You are exactly where you're meant to be at any given moment in time. Yeah. And so don't, you know, try, obviously life is emotional. So try and keep those emotions in check as much as you can. Don't let them rule you. Don't, you know, I think Tom Hanks said it best on a podcast, you know, this too shall pass. All of that is so, so prevalent, but you are exactly where you're meant to be when you're meant to be there. You know, life has a definitive start and end, and everything in the middle is just a ride. Enjoy it. There's going to be ups, downs, rounds, loop the loops, backflips, all sorts going on. You know, try not to be too high or too low. Just try and ride it out, because you're exactly where you're meant to be when you're meant to be there, and you will get through.
Well, we've definitely enjoyed having you on thus far. One of the things we always enjoy is if you have a book or, you know, a podcast or something that our listeners can reach out to and kind of enjoy, what book about real estate or life would you recommend?
So books about life, I would 100%, a guy that is a bit of a guru for me is Simon Sinek. Don't know if you know him. I've got a lot of his books, but yeah, Start With Why, fantastic book.
Yeah. It's a great book. Yeah.
Oh yeah, incredible. But I've got a few of his others, Leaders Eat Last. Just every time I listen to Simon Sinek, I'm just like, why can't you just run the world? If more people were like you, we'd be good. I love the guy, you know. And if you're gonna ask, any book by him. The other book I really, really enjoy that really helped me, and I've actually recommended to my mum and dad and my brother to read, is something called The Chimp Paradox. I can't remember, Professor Steve something or other, I can't remember his name, but it's called The Chimp Paradox. But that's definitely a self-help, self-learning, and it talks about our emotions and that we all have a mental chimp. And when something doesn't go away, our chimp screams and shouts, and that's where we react emotionally. But if you give your chimp a name, my one's called Dave. Every time something goes wrong, you say, hey, Dave, here's a banana back in your box. Behave yourself. And your emotions are in check. And you can, and honestly, that's another great book. So not necessarily about real estate, more about life and everything else. But I think all these things bleed into each other.
They definitely do. And we definitely don't want to upset Dave with this last question. but it's a question that's absolutely important for our podcast. And it's the whole reason why we do it is we think that the men and women who are in the arena tend to have the most insightful ideas on who to reach out to next. So who should we bring on the podcast next?
Okay. I knew this question was coming because you prepped me for it, but I have three answers. If it was it was a dream person, if you could get anyone on here, I already mentioned Simon Sinek. He's like, wow, that would be amazing, right? I get it, but that would be the dream guy.
I think he's a hard get, but we can try.
If you're talking about the real estate industry, and obviously I'm very UK-led, being in the UK myself, there's a guy who, he was previously my boss. I called him Work Dad for a long time, and now I'm very pleased to say he's a friend of mine. His name is Michael Dubitsky. He worked on my side of the fence for a long time. He's working for a tech firm that put tech into serviced office buildings in particular at the moment. He is like an encyclopedia of knowledge for real estate industry, and he has a really unique way of looking at things. I 100%, and I can make the intro if you want to, would recommend you having a chat with him. And the last one, because if I don't say this, I will not have a home to go home to, is my wife. my wife, Kiri. So she works on the other side. I mentioned that we have brokers and providers. She works for a provider, and she's been in the industry for 5 or 6 years. And so she's had a very different experience of the industry to me. So her name is Kiri Norton Brennan. And yeah, if I don't mention her, then yeah, I'll probably get divorced and kicked out.
Well, I'm happy if you can make all those intros. You know, if you got to hook up with Simon, that's great as well.
Simon, listen to this, please give us a shout out. We love you.
And so the last question, and this is also a very important question, is if someone listened to the podcast today and is like, hey, I really want to get in touch with Jimmy, what's the best way to do that?
Best way, well, you can grab me on LinkedIn. I'm very active. You can send me a DM. It's me. It's not a bot. I know AI is out there, but I will respond to you personally. You can send me an email via my website, which is lovemondaysofficespace.com. Something I would encourage everyone to do, if they have 5 minutes and if they've been interested in what we're talking to, on my website, under the resources tab, there is a dream office quiz. It is designed to be done in under 1 minute. You just answer 3 very simple ABC questions, and it recommends, based on your answers, some options. It is unique to everyone. I've spent a lot of time developing that, and I think people, if they're interested in the difference in service, flexible offices and leased offices, I think, as I say, it takes a minute off your time. I think people would be very interested to go through that. So yeah, head to there, hit me up on LinkedIn, Jimmy Brennan, or drop me an email via the website and you'll get through to me and I will respond, I promise.
Jimmy, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today, and we have to have you on the future.
Lovely. I appreciate you having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Jimmy. We appreciate his insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter and help us provide quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfear with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.